Hello, hello, hello. Hello, Georgians, hello, global citizens, and hello, concerned Americans. My name is Varun Kadathala, and I'm the current co-host of the Politician Podcast, which myself and my high school best friend Damian Galvin created in June of this year to talk about issues that interest us, issues that disgust us, and issues that America needs to know about. In other words, myself and Damian created this podcast to deconstruct public policy issues of the past and the present and create a more equitable future for all of us. We have a very, very special episode queued up for you guys, but before we play this episode, we're going to give a special thank you to our sponsor, Patreon, and our wonderful team here at Politician, which includes high school juniors Jada Pilling, Yi Shen, and Julia Hartman. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode, and we hope that you enjoy. See you in the episode.
And we're rolling. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Politician. And my name is Damian Galvin, and as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Varun.
Hello, everybody. My name is Varun Kadathala, the co-host of the Politician podcast with my best friend, Damian Galvin. I'm talking today about social issues, public service issues, but more importantly, the vice presidential debate, which happened yesterday for us. Today's Thursday, we're recording. It's going to come to you guys Friday, so 2 days earlier for you guys. It was a very different debate than I saw on last week, the presidential debate. I think that, Damian, the one word that does explain this debate is a debate, because we saw an actual debate between two respectable people who follow the rules for the most part. We'll talk about that later, but I think that it was a debate by its very definition. I think that was a stark contrast from what happened last week. Now, I know I asked last week, Damian, you and Will, who we don't have in attendance today, but I asked both of you guys who you think won the debate right off the bat. And I think that I'm going to veer from that approach today. I don't want to ask who won the debate, because I think that this time around, it wasn't as clear, if you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, last time it was very, very obvious who won the debate based upon the rhetoric. But I think this time it was very, very, a little bit different. So I want to first of all talk about the tenets, what happened in the debate, and then we can make that decision at the end of our episode today. To begin with, I want to start by a couple of housekeeping things. We have a campaign to give toys to the underprivileged kids in our community. If Damian, you want to talk about a little bit more and how we've made progress on that, I'll hand it off to you.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're doing some community events here. As Varun said, this year has been extremely hard for a lot of people. You know, there's for a lot of people, every single year is difficult and challenging, and it's hard to make ends meet, especially around Christmas time. So we decided that, you know, we want to use this platform that we have for good, and that we really want to try to get involved with our community. And so we did just that. And we're going to try to give kids in low income areas within our community access to toys this Christmas season, just to make sure that feeling of, you know, this year being, for lack of better word, sorry, you know, it was a unfortunate year, to say the least. That's probably the understatement of the century. But it was an unfortunate year, and I think it was an unfortunate year for a lot of people. We just want to make sure that the holiday season doesn't reflect the rest of 2020. So, you know, as Varun said, we've made some progress. We met with the group that we're going to be doing this with. It's called Holiday House here in our community. And we're going to be doing a lot of different events, but a big part of that is our GoFundMe. So, you know, go check out our Instagram. We'll be sure to advocate it there a little bit more. Follow us on Instagram and on Twitter. Both of them are at Politician Show. And I know that sounds like a plug, but if you really do want to stay up to date with stuff that we're doing like this, because we have a lot of stuff coming up that's exciting, that's probably the best way to do it. And that's the best way to get the links, because we really can't just give you guys links through the podcast, unfortunately. If we could, then I wouldn't even be shouting anything out. But to stay up to date with everything, be sure to go check out our social media, and you guys can get the links. You guys can go find the GoFundMes and everything that we're doing to make sure that you guys are, donating to what you guys think, you know, is worthy. And just seeing what we're doing, because I think that we have a lot of exciting stuff coming up. And it's for me, it's something that feels really good to be able to do. We're going to have a very interesting guest on tomorrow, actually. And you guys will probably see that episode Monday. But he gave us 120 handcrafted toys for this drive. And it's just something that's absolutely amazing. And, you know, I think that me and Varun can already say that it's a success. Woo. me and Varun can already say that it's a success. But you know, we're going to try to make the most out of it, and we're going to do some really cool events here in the community, and hopefully we'll have pictures of that once again on our Instagram. We want to get those wooden toys painted, and this individual is very interesting. I don't want to spoil the episode too much, but you know, is there anything else in particular that you want to say, Rune?
I just want to mention that, you know, people are in a hard time today because of a lot of incapabilities of our presidential administration. I want to talk about that today. But before we continue, I want to address your point. The understatement of the century. I think that a lot of very important understatements were made during the debate just a couple of days ago, 2 days ago for you guys, as I said. I think that the hard thing for Vice President Pence was speaking behind a plexiglass barrier. And speaking to the American people about how the coronavirus has been handled and how the swine flu pandemic, which killed, I think, infected 12,000 people or something around the nature, that was a failure of the government. When you're sitting in between a candidate on a vice presidential stage with a plexiglass barrier, with 210,000 Americans who've perished from this virus, with the president of the United States fallen ill from this virus. So I think there was a lot of very radical understatements made during the vice presidential debate. Thoughts on that, Damian?
Yeah, I loved your tweet. It was I don't exactly remember word for word, but it was basically just mentioning what you were saying. And it's very interesting to be like, you know, we're getting through this, like, just kind of the uplifting message as he's like looking at Kamala Senator Harris rather, through a plexiglass, as you mentioned. You don't want to laugh at it, but I mean, what else can you really do? It's just such an ironic situation where it's like you have one man telling, you know, thank you to the American people for all your sacrifices. And he's sitting there with a plexiglass between him and, you know, the other vice presidential candidate. So it's an odd situation, to say the least. I don't necessarily know. Like you said, if there was a winner, I hope maybe, you know, by the end of this conversation, if we'd be able to, I want to say that like Mike Pence won, just because I really do want to maintain, you know, kind of that bipartisan idea, but I don't think that there was a clear cut winner. But by there not being a clear cut winner, the Trump presidency lost, right?
Yeah. And what I mean, I was about to say that.
Yeah.
Took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah. What I mean by that is, is you're down 15, 16, at best 9 points on some polls. And, you know, you can compare this to 2016 and you can say, oh, well, this time 2016, Donald Trump was down, blah, 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 on certain polls. And it's different, right? So different. In 2016, I mean, a couple days before the election, you had Hillary go back under investigation by the FBI, which was something that definitely interfered with the election. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, it could have cost her a lot of votes. But by not winning, you lost. So what's your take on it? What do you think was the strong points in this conversation? Because I think that it was a lot of going back and forth, but this time it wasn't necessarily, I don't know if the best word for it is bickering. It wasn't as childish. It was both of them avoiding or turning questions. I think that a highlight of the debate for me, and I want to know what you think about this, is the conversation about packing the courts and how Kamala could not answer it.
Right.
Or Senator Harris. Sorry.
Right, Senator Harris. You know, that's Kamala to a lot of Americans. The first kind of black and, you know, African-American, Indian heritage woman. She's very very radical in the pick that Joe Biden chose. But I think that, you know, Kamala Harris represents America well, and the Joe Biden-Harris ticket represents America well. I want to speak to your point about packing the courts, though, because I think that's extremely important. Before I do, I want to first of all say that the Donald Trump administration, the campaign, whatever you want to call it, they needed this victory. And they didn't need, you know, like we're saying, a kind of tie or not a clear winner. They needed a clear-cut winner in the most literal sense possible. And if that was Joe Biden on the other side of that stage, I think the Vice President Mike Pence would have had no, you know, problem beating him out, securing that clear-cut victory, as Kamala Harris would have done if Donald Trump was on that side of the on the side of the stage. But I think that because it was these two amazing, you know, professional people who stuck to that professionalism for the most part during this debate, I think that it was a loss for President Trump because he needed this debate. I mean, he needed the victory, and I think that this debate maybe solidified American minds, maybe changed some minds, but I think that it did solidify a lot of people. Didn't change independents because, again, like you said, they ran past the questions. So for Pence, it was mostly about climate change being an existential threat. For Kamala Harris, it was about, like, Joe Biden packing the courts. But you have to look at the records of each of these people. Joe Biden's administration, he has said repeatedly that it beats out his moral conscience to pack the courts. You know, you have to consider that Joe Biden is an institutionalist, an establishment part politician. Like Donald Trump says, he's a politician of 47 years. He doesn't want to veer from our precedent. You've seen it during multiple interviews, multiple things with the court. I'm going to pull up a quote if I can. I'm trying to find it. But Joe Biden has been, you know, historically against eliminating the filibuster and packing the courts. But recently he has veered from that point. He's veered from a stance of institutionalism and sticking to precedent to a stance that's undecided, like a lot of Americans are. And it's hard to be undecided when who you're voting for doesn't really tell you what he's going to do. And I think the reason behind that, I don't like it. I don't like it because at the end of the day, Joe Biden's going to have to do something. You know, if he becomes president, he's going to have to make a decision. And now he's going to make that decision now or then. I think that either way, he has to tell the American people what they're looking for in a Biden presidency. Now, you know, it's a point of contention for many Democrats because I would say the radical left, which is what the Republicans call it, they're calling for an end to the filibuster, which the Republicans, Mitch McConnell, has used to use minority rule to block legislation by Democrats, progressive reform against gun violence, for example, against you know, discrimination, anti-lynching bills, for example. The filibuster has been radically flawed in giving the minority access to banning these majority represented bills, majority supported bills. So I think that's one of the Democrats' main policies. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is because to pack the courts, by definition, you have to end the filibuster. That's a prerequisite. So I think that when you're talking about packing the courts, you're talking about two things. First of all, ending the filibuster, which is, you know, as you and I both know, for our viewers, it's basically when a senator, it only happens in the Senate, they can have a lengthened conversation about certain issues and postpone or even end a debate on an issue by just continuing along to the debate for hours upon hours. There's no end to the limit of this debate. And to end the filibuster, you have to have 60 votes, which is a very high threshold in the Senate. But anyways, that's a prerequisite. And I think that Joe Biden wants to take it step by step when the American people are thinking very far ahead in the future. Because right now, the reality is that Amy Coney Barrett has a very high likelihood of becoming our next Supreme Court justice. And what that does is it puts American healthcare in jeopardy. It puts the healthcare rights of over 20 million Americans in jeopardy. It puts the reproductive rights of every single American woman in jeopardy. It puts every really central issue to progressives on the ballot. So right now, you have to be understanding that in doing so, you're losing some votes, yes, Joe Biden, but you're also gaining a lot of progressive votes, which is exactly what you want at this point in the election. Now, I think that Democrats, I'm going to speak to Democrats. Democrats have had a majority in numbers. You know, we have a strength in numbers, Democrats. But the issue is that Democrats don't turn out. So I think that by proposing things like this, I think it would work in his advantage. Though he may not get some independents, these progressive Democrats would turn out more if he said, you know, I am going to consider as a real possibility packing the courts. Because your Republican voters aren't going to vote for Joe Biden because he says, I'm not going to pack the courts. They're not going to do it. You know, these people are cemented within their beliefs. Now, that's my position. It's kind of jumbled, but I'm just going to make the claim that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris really need to cement that before the election because they're going to have to do it after the election. And that's going to be a bigger issue if they don't secure the Senate, if they don't secure the House, which is unlikely, but that's going to be an issue. So back to you.
Yeah. I was just going to say the weird thing about this, right, is on one side, I think it's 70% of Americans think that we should wait till the next president, whoever that may be, to make the pick, right? And so you're talking about going against the American will and packing the court, which I don't want. I don't want the court to be packed. I want the nine justices, but I also don't want Donald Trump to make the Supreme Court nominee, or for his Supreme Court nominee right now to go into the Supreme Court before the election. If he wins, it's fair game. If he wins, it's fair game. But I hate the hypocrisy of them not allowing Obama's Supreme Court pick, but, you know, allowing theirs to go in. I hate that hypocrisy. So I think that it's very interesting because it's being played as something that's very damning, right? It's being played as something that's very damning, but I have to think, and I want to know what you think about this. I have to think, what would be happening if the question was the other way, and it was Donald Trump being asked if he would pack the Supreme Court? Because I feel like his answer would be like, I might not. I don't know. We'd have to look into it.
It's much like his answer about the elections, about exactly. Whether he would accept the results of this election.
So that's the thing. Is it really that damning to say that you wouldn't? So it creates a really interesting political situation, as you're kind of mentioning, because you're saying that progressives would really like that idea of packing the court if Donald Trump's pick is
upon that contingency. Yes.
Yeah. If that does proceed, which it looks like it's going to happen, and in that case, you're right. Conservatives, if Joe Biden said that he wasn't going to pack the court, conservatives, I'm trying to get to the bottom of what's the political loss, what's the political gain? Because well, is it going to...
I think I know what the political loss
yeah,
is.
Dude, yeah, go
I,
for
if
it.
If I may speak here.
Yeah.
So I'm going to speak on something. Like I said before, Joe Biden is an institutionalist, a centralist. You know, he wants to appease both sides. His presidency could mean a lot of good things for the global economy, the global relationscape, foreign policy, everything like that. The reason why, and I wanted to mention this later, but the reason why is because Joe Biden's a policy maker. He wants to create bipartisan change. So in him packing the courts, it really denies him the opportunity to gain bipartisan change because, like I said before, it goes both ways. You know, you're not going to gain conservative voters, but you're also not going to gain conservative support in the Senate and the House of Representatives. Now, the converse to that, even what I'm saying, I'm contradicting myself continuous times, but the converse to that is if the Democrats gain the Senate and the House, which it looks very likely that they are. And in that sense, I mean, as far as you do need bipartisan change, I think that Joe Biden will have enough people behind him to where he doesn't have to kind of portray himself as the bipartisan president. Because Damian, I want to mention this. Joe Biden, back in his, you know, Senate and House runs, his vice presidential tenure, he was experiencing a very different political landscape than now. A political landscape where you could have bipartisanship, where you can have reasonable conversations without jeopardizing Americans on the border, Americans in cages, immigrants in cages, without jeopardizing, you know, healthcare, without jeopardizing reproductive rights. You could have those conversations. And now it's so hyper-polarized, hyper-partisanship is so rampant that you can't have those conversations. And the starting point is truth decay. Yeah. And we mentioned this. But I want to talk about the fact that Joe Biden, I don't know if he can hope for bipartisanship in his presidency. So I think that at this point, even though it's very clear that Joe Biden wants to promote bipartisanship in his tenure, and he is holding back on that decision to achieve that purpose, I think that it's hard to gain that level of bipartisanship without de-radicalizing the right.
Yeah.
Because, and I think the only way to de-radicalize the right is to overturn their decision back in 2016 to deny Merrick Garland that position, which went against really what they're doing right now. And in that sense, it undermined democracy.
Yeah.
And what they're doing right now also undermines democracy. So as much as you can say to Republicans and Democrats, you can tell them, you know, you're breaking the rules, and you can't break the rules just because they did. It's not fair. Well, the problem is that if you sit back and let this happen, you're giving up. You're giving up for 35 years of Amy Coney Barrett, 35 years of African Americans being denied the vote by voter suppression, 35 years of women losing their reproductive rights, 35 years of this democracy crumbling. And this cannot happen. I don't care if it's a vertical slope, Democrats gaining power, Republicans gaining power, but we can't let 35 years of anti-democracy court politics with politicians dressed in robes in the court, we can't let that happen. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the biggest issues beyond bipartisanship.
Yeah. I think that's interesting because I don't know if I'd go to the extent to say ACB would crumble our democracy. But now that I'm thinking about it, every time she puts the robe on and every decision that's made, it's going to be that reminder of either the fact that the democracy has failed, or a reminder of when the democracy almost did fail, right? I always thought about, like, would the Republican, or would the conservatives rather, in the Supreme Court take her in? Obviously, I don't necessarily know how the Supreme Court works, but my idea of it is, like, there's, like, two factions, right? It's like there's the conservative and there's the liberals, and the liberals hang out a little bit more than the conservatives do.
And then there's John Roberts.
Yeah, exactly. Then there's John Roberts. Exactly. But my thing was, you know, would the conservatives really accept her as a member, or would they consider her legitimate? It's an interesting conversation, but I want to step away. I want to step back a little bit from current politics. And I want to talk about what you were talking about, which is the bipartisanship, or the hyper-polarization that we're kind of facing, or the lack of bipartisanship, and everything being so partisan right now. I was talking to our marketing director last night. You know, we were talking about a little bit on the podcast till like 1 a.m. Or before the podcast, me and you were talking about it. And you know, I tell this to you and I told this to him again. We could make a podcast about making a podcast. And what I mean by that is, like, our conversations after and before the shows are extremely interesting. And like our conversations about stuff that we'd like to do with the podcast, I feel like some people would be really engaged in. Not that we're going to do that. It's just something that I don't know if you do this. Whenever you're having conversations, are you ever just like, oh, I wish I was recording this right now and we could upload this? Like, just with random people?
We both do it. And I've seen it with both of us before. We'll be talking to somebody, me and Damien, and we'll be like right after. You know what? I thought I should have recorded this. And then Damien goes, yeah, I should have done. I thought the same thing.
Yeah.
So I think that we have the instinct towards recording things.
Exactly. But
there's so many conversations in our nation that have to be, in our sense, have to be recorded. Kind of to spread that mission and spread the vision. So I think it's influential to record a conversation.
Yeah, definitely towards us. And I feel like now anytime that I'm having an interesting conversation, I'm like, you want to come on the podcast? Just like whoever it is, it's like, you want to come on a podcast? Like maybe an hour, give me 30 minutes. But nonetheless, we were talking about something that, you know, might come up in the future where it's like being guest speakers at locations, right? You know, me and Varun, that is. And, you know, he asked me, and this came up because I was watching some interesting TED Talks. I've always been into TED Talks, but we had an assignment recently where we had to look at some TED Talks. And I was looking at them and I was like, you know what? Me and Varun would kill these. I was like, if me and Varun got on a stage, we would kill some TED Talks. But he asked me, he was like, what would you talk about? And I thought about it for a second. I was like, I talk about how partisan we are right now and how, you know, Joe Biden mentioned it, right? I said I wanted to step away from politics, but just, you know, he was in Gettysburg and he mentioned, once again, we are a house divided. And I was listening to what's the guy's name on Fox News? Not on Fox News, Lynn Shaw. I think that's his name. He does the radio
Limbaugh.
Show.
Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, Rush Limbaugh. I was listening to Limbaugh. And he gets a phone call, right? He gets a phone call in. And you know how he does the phone calls, whatever. He gets the phone calls in. This guy was like, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast, but I've said this to a couple of people. And the guy answers, you know, Rush is like, hey. And the guy's like, hey, you know, I just wanted to say, we're talking a lot about, because on the right side of the media, they talk about, oh, if the Democrats lose, then it's the end. The Democrats are going to go crazy. They're already going crazy. You know, they always say, like, oh, if the Democrats, or when, that's their thing. When the Democrats lose, be prepared, because everyone's going to go crazy. And this guy calls in, and he says, talking about what happens when the Democrats lose, we need to talk about what happens if the Republicans lose. And Rush is like, don't think like that. Nonetheless, this guy continues with his point. He says, if the Democrats win, I think we need to secede from the union. And I was like,
you heard this?
Yeah, I heard this. I swear to God.
Wow.
He was like, I think we need to secede from the union. He's like, I don't know what the process would be, but I think that we need to secede.
Wow.
And
Rush
just sat there and he was like, don't think like that. Don't, we won't lose. Like, Rush didn't even know what to say. He was like, I got to get to a commercial. It was funny because, you know, the Republicans always talk about the Democrats like spreading fear and this and that, and the Democrats being radicals. That's the most radical thing. First of all, it's the Republican Party, right? Which is like the Republican Party was kind of started by Lincoln trying to preserve the Union, and now they're like, we should secede from the Union. Not saying that that's representative of the Republican Party,
which
in
you
any
know,
sense.
The party policy switched up in the middle.
Yeah, they did. Definitely. But, you know, they always, anytime that I think, because party policies did switch up, that's a conversation for another day. But anytime I think about the fact that party policies did switch up, I think about Ted Cruz at the RNC in 2016 going, this is the party. I can't do a Ted. I don't even know what the hell Ted Cruz sounds like.
That's your Barack impersonation, David.
Was it?
That's the Barack.
I let Barack slip out. No, what I was going to say is I always think about Ted Cruz being, this is the party of Lincoln, you know, we freed the slaves and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, party policies switched. But nonetheless, right? I said, going back to what I was talking about with the marketing director, I said, I'd really like to talk about the partisanship and the fact that we can't get together right now. And the fact that we are a house divided. And I think that in a sense, we've always been a house divided. Right, but in being a house divided, we've always tried to make each other better.
Yeah.
You know, for example, if one half of the house bought a new couch, the other half would buy a better couch, and then the other half would buy a better couch, and it was this competition that made the union better. You know, it was in order to form a more perfect union, as it says in the in the preamble, right?
Yeah,
but now it feels like it's more of a sense where we're stealing each other's stuff, or we're going in and we're graffitiing each other's sides of the house. That's not okay. But I, you know, when he asked me, "What would you talk about?" the first thing that came to my mind was that partisanship, and I try to think about when this partisanship began. And I think to 9/11, I'm like, it can't be 9/11, right? 9/11, we were so unified after 9/11. I mean, how we passed the Patriot Act, which sucks. The Patriot Act is very bad. But, you know, we passed the Patriot Act as a nation. We come together. We unify. And then Barack Obama is elected. And I think that that's when our partisanship kicked in. I don't think that we've always been like this. I don't think that we've always been this partisan. I always think back to the 2008 election, where John McCain said, you know, to the lady concerned about Obama being a Muslim terrorist, he said, "No, ma'am, Obama's an amazing family man. If he wins, you'll be in great hands." After that, I think that was the decline. But what do you think? What do you think is the decline of our bipartisanship?
Right. I want to first of all address a couple of points. I want to address this, but I also want to move on to the debate. It's a very good point. But I want to mention this. Patriot Act, you know, in the words of the most unpatriotic man that I've seen on the national spotlight, was a huge mistake. And I think that was one of the worst consequences that we had. It had some fruits, but on the major of it, it was huge mistake. Now, I want to talk about a house divided. And I think that we've always, like you said, been a house divided. But I think that before, we were a house divided over solutions, right? We debated exactly our solutions. We had our own respect for one another. We talked about the facts like they were there. You know, we talked about climate change in another respect. Republicans deny climate change. Even some Democrats did. That was the one place where we didn't respect the facts. But on the all, we debated solutions. And mm-hmm. I think that we saw a little bit of that during the vice presidential debate. But I think on the all, you know, from what I've looked at on C-SPAN, you know, House proceedings, Senate proceedings, presidential debates, I think that we've gone from debating the solutions to starting to debate the facts. And that's an impediment to democracy. That's called truth decay. We talked about it on our episode with Jennifer Kavanaugh. It's truth decay. And I think that debating the facts makes it increasingly hyper-partisan, even more than ever in our history of our nation, because it makes people question the very realities that we're facing right now. And I think I'm going to mention it. It comes from the right for the most part. They question the realities we're facing right now. They question the coronavirus. They question the existential threat, like Mike Pence did on the debate day, that climate change plays to our environment. They question you know, women's reproductive rights, like I keep mentioning. They question the right of the American people to health care. And the latter part of things weren't, you know, uncontentious. But climate change is a fact. We have to begin to recognize that. To have any comprehensive policies against fracking, which I think fracking should be banned.
Can you explain fracking?
Right. So in a layman's term, fracking is shooting sand into the ground to kind of get the oil reserves and fossil fuel reserves from under the ground. Now, it's okay. A very weird thing to talk about, but they basically shoot sand and particulates under the ground.
Yeah, to push up the oil.
Exactly. Okay. So that's how they get the hard-to-reach oil. Now, fracking has terrible effects on the American health of people around the fracking places, fracking wells. Okay. Has terrible effects on the environment, obviously. But more importantly, I think that the most direct effect of this is the release of carcinogens and health, you know, cancer-related and health risk-related things into the environment around these areas. And we've seen, you know, birth defects.
So is this from the fracking itself? So are there fracking factories?
Right, they're fracking plants, fracking wells.
So it's like they're oil mines.
Absolutely. Okay. If you look it up, I encourage you all to.
I'll Google it with you guys. So, you know, right. I'll Google fracking because I'm interested. I, you know, like I said, when I don't know something, I'll gladly, you know, ask about it. So I wasn't too sure. I kept hearing the term fracking. I don't think they even explained it to the American people.
Fracking is a hard concept, but I think it's not hard to mention the fact that fracking is terrible for the American health and for the environment. And I think that's a fact that should not be ignored, just as the existential threat that climate change is should not be ignored. So I think that right now we have to veer towards debating the facts instead of debating the very, debating solutions, instead of debating the very facts, because that's an impediment to democracy and moving forward. Now, I want to talk about something that happened during the debate. Mm-hmm. I kind of bashed Kamala Harris to an extent, which I don't usually do. You know, Kamala has my respect. Senator Harris has my respect. But I want to bash Vice President Pence. I do. Because there was a time, for the entire debate, I was pretty neutral on Vice President Pence. I thought he was doing a great job. But there was one time where he pissed me off in the most literal sense possible. When he said that President Trump is not racist and inclusive because of the fact that he has a Jewish granddaughter or grandchildren.
Did he actually say that? Jewish
grandchildren. He said that on the debate stage, just as the person who called AOC a B word in Congress came up and didn't even apologize to her. He said, I have a daughter. I have a wife. I understand what it feels like. That is not an excuse. That's the right's excuse. It's been the right's excuse for so long in the history of things. I think that when you hear the Vice President of the United States saying the president has the ability to say these things without being implicated because he has Jewish grandchildren is just so ignorant of the diversity issues, the racism that Americans face, because that doesn't give you a pass. It does not give you a pass to constantly bash Americans. It is incredible the amount of things that this president get away with and the right believes. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, is a deterioration of fact and, more importantly, a deterioration of people's self-respect to themselves, their race, and the people around them.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you're mentioning this is, I think that this is the perfect conversation to begin with. I definitely want to have my response to it. After we come back from a quick commercial break, we'll be back after a quick message from our sponsors. And we're back. We're assuming many of you are back as well. We've been having conversations and we figure out that you guys do like to kind of take a break here at the 30 minutes. So if you guys are coming back to us, just a quick kind of a synopsis of what we just talked about. So we were talking about the debate a lot, and we were having a very interesting conversation, the vice presidential debate, that is. We were having an interesting conversation. At the end of this, we're trying to get to who won. In the midst of our conversation, a conversation about partisanship and bipartisanship and the lack thereof, when talking about bipartisanship, came up. And so we had a little bit of a discussion. We veered off a little bit to discuss that. And then we came back and had an interesting conversation about fracking and our response to kind of the things that Vice President Pence was saying, especially when it came to race relations.
And Kamala Harris about the whole packing the courts thing.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we also had that conversation.
So we are being, in a sense, bipartisan. There we go.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we were kind of bashing on both candidates. Definitely. I didn't like Kamala's response to that question, by the way. I really disliked it, but I guess it's a good time to kind of talk about... I wanted to talk about something before we continue the conversation again. Did you hear what happened with the Michigan governor?
Oh, yeah. I was in AP Environmental, and I saw a text on my phone, and I was like... It was my dad, and he's like, Varun, did you just hear Governor Whitmer was, you know, threatened by a kidnapping incident and almost got kidnapped? And I was like, he's talking about Democratic governor. I think it's like Kirsten Whitmer or something. And he was like, yeah. He's like, that actually happened today. And I was like, oh my God. And I picked up my phone, tweeted, and I was like, you know, this is insane.
Dude, what the hell? You know what?
Talk about hyper-partisanship.
Dude, no, talk about hyper-partisanship. Talk about, you know, it's such a thing where they're like, Antifa, oh, Antifa, the radical. When, you know, I think the quote of the night from Donald Trump is, I see it more happening from the left. When, you know, when he was asked, when he was asked about if he would condemn white supremacy.
Good impersonation of President Trump.
Thank you.
I thought you just had Obama, but I guess you have Trump as well.
Yeah, I have Trump. I have a big arsenal kit, a big toolkit. Arsenal. I have a big arsenal. That's what it is. It's not arsenal kit. I don't think anyone can do Donald Trump except for Donald Trump. It's very rare to have a good Donald Trump, but I think that there's some key points where it's kind of like him sounding he's what's it called? Constantly stuffy. Like,
he has nasal voice. I mean, he has a very nasal voice. I mean, you have to understand he has an extremely nasal voice, and that's what makes him up. I mean, it makes his
points. It's the New York accent. You add the New York accent, the soft New York accent, with the nasal congestion, you get words like huge, and it's like the funniest thing. But that's not.
It's such a hugely ineffective policy.
Yeah. Exactly. What was I even talking about? Yes. Not a laughing matter. Michigan's governor almost getting kidnapped. You know, he talked about the left and the radical left and how it's them. I haven't heard of Antifa trying to kidnap anyone.
Haven't heard Antifa as being an organization.
Yeah. But let's go under the assumption that they are an organization, which the FED
is a reality for a bunch of Americans.
Yeah, exactly. So Antifa kidnapping. That's what I want to, just to make sure that I don't get like fact checked. Okay. No, when you type in Antifa kidnapping, the FBI, you know, foiled plot comes out. Man, you know what this reminds me of? It's like a sketch from SNL. It feels like a sketch from SNL where it's like the governor was going to get kidnapped. And I mean, SNL's going to have a hard time, by the way, because the presidential debate seemed like an SNL sketch. This seems like an SNL sketch. 2020 probably seems like a huge SNL sketch. But
I think they might be losing some viewership to like maybe just every single news
to CNN,
the entire nation. CNN. I mean, Donald Trump might save them by saying fake news, but yeah, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, for real. But nonetheless, kidnapping, man, and they had this. I mean, they had an extent. They prepared this more than we prepared for the SATs. I mean, they were ready.
Absolutely.
They were ready. I mean, first of all, kudos to the FBI, for, you know, keeping our leaders safe. The media has a responsibility to keep them accountable, and you know, the FBI has a responsibility to keep us safe, and they did that. They kept the governor safe. And so regardless of what side of the aisle you're on, where you sit and when you're talking about policy or what you think about issues such as Roe v. Wade or who won the debate, that doesn't matter. I'm happy to see Donald Trump doing well. And I'm happy to see the governor of Michigan safe. And I think that that should be the case for all Americans. But what caused this, Varun? Because it's very easy if you're on the left side to say, oh, it was President Trump. Because, you know, those tweets come up where it's like, liberate Michigan. Or wait, maybe it was liberate Minnesota. But same kind of concept. And you have the liberate Virginia, protect your Second Amendment. What, I mean, I don't know if a manifesto has come out about this group. I don't know if the FBI has a manifesto.
Yeah.
About this group. But what do you think caused this? Because we were talking about what caused this age of bipartisan or of hyperpartisanship. What do you think caused this incident in particular?
You know, I want to talk about something. I just saw on Twitter how yep. Donald Trump has lambasted Governor Whitmer on her policies, not thanking him for providing support right after this all happened. And in a sense, he was masking his whole thing. I want you guys to look at the tweets. So, they're on his Twitter, and they were posted 53 minutes ago. For you guys, it's going to be a day and 53 minutes ago. But I think that he was trying. He began his tweets. Let's start here. Governor Whitmer of Michigan has done a terrible job. And he continues to say, you know, they foiled a dangerous plot and it wasn't the right thing. I don't condone violence. And he ended with Governor Whitmer, open up your state, open up your schools, and open up your churches. So I'm trying to get at the message here. The message here is very clear. It's that Governor Whitmer deserved what was given to her. And I don't just want to talk about President Trump. I want to talk about his advisors. Earlier today, one of his advisors came on. I'm looking at his source right now. Let's see. He came on. Jason Miller came on a very, very big news source, and he said she wakes up every day with hatred in her heart. That's a quote for Trump. And this is the day of us figuring out she had a plot against her, a plot, you know, to kidnap her by 13 individuals. So I think that it does a big disservice to the American people to see this rhetoric being put out, even in light of such kidnapping incidents. I think that it most definitely encourages these kinds of things to happen, because, you know, when President Trump got the coronavirus, Joe Biden said, I hope he does well. I hope him and Melania gets better. I hope they do well. And as soon as Governor Whitmer gets a plot against her for a kidnapping, you know, a very organized plot for kidnapping.
Yeah.
This president comes out and says, you know, I think that she's a terrible, terrible person, you know, a terrible governor and everything. So it is so petty. It is extremely petty. I don't know if you guys are looking at these tweets, but it's extremely petty. But more than petty, I think that it's so petty.
Rather than say thank you, she calls me a white supremacist. Let me just read the tweet in extent.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Because this is so upsetting. This is so unpresidential. Governor Whitmer of Michigan has done a terrible job. She locked down her state for everyone except her husband's boating activities. The federal government provided tremendous help to the great people of Michigan. My Justice Department and federal law enforcement announced today that they foiled a dangerous plot against the governor of Michigan. Rather than say thank you, she calls me a white supremacist, while Biden and Democrats refuse to condemn Antifa, anarchists, looters, and mobs that burnt down Democrat cities. I do not tolerate any extreme violence. Defending all Americans, even those who oppose and attack me, is what I will always do as your president. Governor Whitmer, open up your state, open up your schools, open up your churches. Defending all Americans, right? I'm done reading the tweet after churches. What the hell did I just read? I don't usually get upset. 50. This is 56 minutes ago. This isn't a day ago, right? This isn't like it happened yesterday. This is 56 minutes ago. He just said that he's going to defend all Americans, even those who oppose and attack me, then attack. He can't even get a tweet out without contradicting himself. It is so genuinely upsetting. They're not Democratic run cities. This is an American-run country. This is your country. They're American cities, not Democrat cities. First and foremost, okay? Antifa didn't do this. White supremacist group did this. Anarchists didn't do this. Looters didn't do this. The mobs that you allege burnt down Democrat-run cities, which, may I remind you, once again, they are your cities under your America. Just like you blamed Bush for the 2,000 people that died in 9/11 saying he was the president, so it's his fault. I'm going to blame you for the same cities burning down. I'm going to blame you for the 210,000 Americans that died, because that's the standard that you would hold Bush under. That's the standard you would hold Obama under. And frankly, that's the standard that you would hold Biden under if they were president during this time. So again, in your cities, let's say that Antifa, anarchist looters, and mobs did burn them down. I'm not denying that. That's not the situation at hand right now. We just had an American's life threatened, regardless of whether they're Democrat, whether they're Republican. If you read into this plan, it is disgusting, it is disturbing, and it frankly ran chills down my spine. Right, to think about, right. Imagine how you would feel knowing that someone wants to kidnap you and the president of the United States comes out and tweets this. It is so upsetting. So upsetting.
I'm glad you read it out. Because to be honest with you, I looked at it 20 minutes ago and I was numb to it. And hearing you say it out loud, you know, I became a little bit less numb, but I was numb to it. And the reason why I was numb to it is because I missed the rhetoric that unifies people. I missed the rhetoric that gives people just respect and common decency. That's the rhetoric of Joe Biden. That's the rhetoric of Kamala Harris. That's even the rhetoric of Vice President Pence at times. But that is not the rhetoric of this president. Not the rhetoric of this ticket. Now, I want to go back to a quote based on the topic of respecting all Americans. I want to go back on a quote by Barack Obama, the quote that won him presidency, in my opinion. Back in the 2004 convention, we worship an awesome God in the blue states. We don't like federal agents poking around our libraries in the red states. We coach Little League in the blue states and have some gay friends in the red states. We are one people. We are one people. He gave this quote to the American people. This is what got him national credibility. This is what got him popularity, because he unified the American people. You don't become a president. You don't become a successful president by dividing the American people, by holding double standards, by saying Joe Biden, like Vice President Mike Pence said. I'm going to tie it back to the debate like I always do. Vice President Pence said that Joe Biden, one of the biggest failures of that presidency, was allowing the swine flu. Which killed or even infected 12,000 people to surface. This virus has killed 210,000 Americans, infected millions of Americans. And he calls that a failure? This is the definition of double standards. Like you said, you're holding presidents of the past to different standards. You saw Vice President Pence do that the other day. And I think that, you know, you can't come up there and say Joe Biden had a failure with the swine flu when Joe Biden allowed for our country to pass that flu. Mm-hmm. Say what you want about it, but that vice presidential debate was not behind a set of plexiglass barriers. That vice presidential debate had people in the audience without masks on. That vice presidential debate had audience interaction. That vice presidential debate had ads. So we're in a different reality today. I think that I want to talk about something, Damien.
Yeah.
It's a very strong point, but I want to talk about the debate itself. I mean, Governor Whitmer's incident was incredibly, incredibly disturbing. And I think that we did enough, Damien. You did enough. And by reading the quote itself, not even by you explaining it, by you reading the quote to our listeners, they should be able to understand the magnitude of what we're facing right now in the White House, the magnitude of the uphill battle we have to fight. But I want to talk about something. I want to talk about, I forgot what I wanted to talk about so hard. So, why don't I let you speak and then I'll get back to my point. It was a very strong point. Forget it.
I was just going to say, Donald Trump is the first president in my lifetime who does not try to unite the American people. Does not even pretend to try. Instead, he tries to divide us. We are witnessing the consequences of 3 years of this deliberate effort. General James Mattis. Isn't it crazy how with time that statement just ages like a fine wine, right? Just yeah. that statement,
like the on this on the statement of fine, like the very fine people on both sides.
Exactly, right? it just ages so well. I mean, I'd copyright that, because if I just read that, I could have not said General James Mattis taking that quote for myself. Sheesh. I mean, what the hell, man? Is it the drugs that he's on? Is it the...
You know what?
Is it this? Yeah. Are they the steroids? There's no way. Dude, I don't even see... Oh, my God.
I think it's a real concern, Damien.
No,
it's we're not talking about just drugs. We're talking about steroids that he's currently taking, which may be forcing him to do these kinds of things. Now, the problem
is... he's crazy either way.
No, I think that he has his own kind of reality. I agree. But I think that it's not unprecedented, but I think that steroids might be doing a little bit. But the problem is that this president is constantly on his phone, constantly on the news, constantly at golf courses. He doesn't want to let go of the entertainment cycle. And he wants that constant attention. Now, I remember my point, Damien. I want to mention the fact that throughout the entire debate, it seemed as if Mike Pence was absolutely, you know, overseeing, you know, just ignoring the American people's inabilities to have constant testing, the American people's inabilities to go out and go outdoors and hug people like they've been doing for so long. You know, the very Rose Garden nomination of Amy Coney Barrett was a testament. They were hugging. They had no masks on. They had hand sanitizer on. And Mike Pence came out and he said, well, it's because a lot of those people in the crowd had tests. The very symbolic nature of that event, it contrasts what the American people have to face at this point. I haven't seen my grandmother for a very long time. I haven't seen my mother for a very long time. She lives in a different state. I can't go visit her because of the coronavirus. These things are real. I can't go to school. I go to school, but I can't go to school without a mask on. Can't do group projects. I can't go to a concert. These things are real. You know, these affect every part of our lives. These affect our mental health. I haven't played the sport I love, basketball, with friends in over 2 months. It is incredible how much this virus affects us. Even me, not even, you know, being remotely affected by this virus. I'm 16 years old. I still think about the effects of this virus. Now, the fact that he's up there, you know, saying, you know, we got tested. It's okay for us to be out here. It completely bashes what the American people are facing right now. And the second point I wanted to make is that when Vice President Mike Pence tried to say the American people have sacrificed so much for this country and you're denying that sacrifice the American people have had, Kamala Harris was not denying that sacrifice. She was denouncing the need for that sacrifice, because if the president had handled this virus better, if the Trump administration set a better example, if it had a mask mandate, if it had better regulations, didn't open up the economy with no precautions, the fact of the matter is that Americans wouldn't have had to sacrifice their lives. That is the sacrifice you're facing right now. Yeah. It's almost like the Aztec emperor saying, you know what? We should respect the sacrifices of those who died on the steps of our pyramids for the kingdom, got their heart taken out for the kingdom. First of all, it's not a right comparison, because the coronavirus deaths aren't helping our nation. It's not helping us advance. He phrased it like that. We should appreciate those sacrifices. No. Yeah. We shouldn't, because the fact of the matter is that we could avoid every single one of those deaths. We could have. I believe we could have.
Yeah.
And I don't care how lethal you think this virus is. I heard the quote, 1 in 6 people had pre-existing conditions. That's simply not true. It is. The fact of the matter is that these people wouldn't have died without the coronavirus.
And they thing is, lived. Yeah, exactly. Life or death matter. Exactly. And the thing is, okay, 1 in 6 people had pre-existing conditions. They're still Americans, damn it. They're still Americans, exactly.
What killed them? The coronavirus.
Yeah.
The amount of Americans right now with pre-existing conditions is incredible. A lot of Americans already have these conditions. Why hasn't the flu killed that many people with pre-existing conditions? Why haven't the swine flu done the same thing? The fact of the matter is that the reason for why these people perished is one reason and one reason alone, and that is COVID-19. Stop denying the fact. Stop debating the fact. Debate solutions. That's what I have.
Yeah. I think back to one moment in the presidential debate where he goes, you know, Joe Biden goes, while Americans are dying, you're out there playing golf. And Trump goes, I bet you play more golf than me.
Didn't even deny it. Come on, man.
Right? Couldn't even deny it. He says, I bet you play more golf than me. Man, first of all, are you kidding? I think presidents playing golf is the stupidest thing. I think presidents should have leisure time. But I think that this idea of presidents playing golf, it's always been something that just appalls me. And more particularly in times of crisis. But, like, it's weird how much of a statistic it can be, right? Like, what is it? Like, Donald Trump has spent... There's, like, statistics on how much time each president has spent playing golf. But nonetheless, in the midst of a pandemic, you can play golf? That... I mean, I can't be the only one that's just, like, kind of amazed by the fact that no one cares that there's thousands of, I mean, more Americans are dying every day than died in one day on 9/11.
Yeah.
Every single day, more Americans are dying in one day than in the, I'd say, the biggest tragedy in American history since Pearl Harbor. Let me just say that one more time. Every day, more Americans are dying every day than the biggest tragedy in American history in almost a century. That is absolutely crazy. And the president is out there playing golf.
I want to interject here.
Go for it.
I want to speak on your point. Based upon what you said, which is something I've believed for a very long time, I want to make this point to our listeners. And this is a very strong point. Imagine you're at 9/11, September 11, 2001, and the attack just happened. Imagine the president of the United States, George W. Bush, playing golf.
No, imagine the president of the United States tweeting this. Architects of the... Twin Towers have done a terrible job. They were horrible architects. I should have gotten the property contract for them instead of them saying sorry to me because their buildings collapsed. They said that I was a bad leader, because that would be the response that you get. Think about this. Yeah. Think about if Joe Biden tweeted the second that the president of the United States got coronavirus, Donald Trump has done a terrible job. He's caused over 210,000 deaths. If I was in charge of the federal government, we would have provided tremendous help to the people of the United States. My CDC and FDA would have given tremendous help to every American. Donald Trump, it is your fault you got coronavirus. That is what just was said with this tweet towards Governor Whitmer. We talk about the thing is Varun, right? We come on the podcast to talk about the debate, and we've talked about the debate, and I think we've talked about it effectively. But
we can talk about it more.
Absolutely. But that's the thing, right? It is more pressing. So you asked a question in the beginning, who lost the debate? It doesn't matter who lost it, because today there's some new headlines. Today there's new headlines. So who cares? And you want to know the truth? These headlines are damning to the president of the United States. These headlines are going to turn off independents. So although they might have won yesterday, I'll give it to them. Mike Pence won the debate. They already lost the week. They already lost this month. And they might already lose the election. Although they might have won the debate, today they lost. When Joe Biden won, you know, in air quotes, the last debate, rather, when Donald Trump lost the last debate, he lost it for 2 days, then he got coronavirus, then he lost for a week, then you know, it was interrupted for a little bit. Let's say Mike Pence won. Now he's losing again. You know, yeah. He said, we'll win so much, we'll get tired of winning. I think that he might have gotten tired of winning. He might be doing this on purpose.
I think more than him getting tired of winning, I think the American people got tired of losing. I think the American people got tired of losing.
We'll see that November
3rd. Because over the last 4 years, we've been losing. Continually, every single day, we've been losing. And, you know, you talked about last week, one of your quotes was that the American people lost on Tuesday, the debate day. I think that this has been a trend that we've been following for so long in this election. Now, I want to talk about the vice presidential debate more in detail. I disagree. I don't know if you were making it for a rhetorical statement or for an actual statement, but I disagree either way. Because Mike Pence absolutely lost that debate, in my opinion. And it's this conversation has substantiated my opinions even more. It's because Vice President Mike Pence lied to the American people. Lied to the American people about the environment, for example. He talked about air pollution levels going down when that doesn't reflect climate change. It's a tested scientific concept that even though countries are taking away air pollution, that pollution simply goes upward. And guess what happens when air pollution goes upwards? CO2 emissions go upwards. That increases climate change. That's the definition of how climate change happens. So when you tell me, a person knows exactly what they're talking about the environment, that air pollution levels are going down, I sit there and I cackle. More than laugh. I sit there and I feel bad for the Americans who are going to go home, think that our environment is getting fixed, our air pollution levels are lower, so we must be in a better environmental state than before, yesterday, and the last year. That's simply not true. President Trump's environmental plan squashed our predictions for the environment. We have estimates that his plan, his new plan, is literally going to, you know, cause an environmental growth by 2030 of 0.00025%. That's absolutely insane when compared to Obama's plan. And I didn't agree with Obama's plan. I didn't. And I was one of the first people to go out there and say, I don't like this plan. It's not radical enough for the environment and what we need for our generation. I have a very strong claim to this. I am Gen Z. You know, I'm a part of Gen Z. So I wasn't happy about that. But what I was disgusted with is that Vice President Pence simply lied to the American people about that, about, you know, taxes, how American people have, you know, less, they have more savings than before. That's simply unsubstantiated information. Mm-hmm. If you look at a fact checker, any fact checker, a lot of the claims that the vice president made were unsubstantiated. So for me, he lost.
Yeah.
But for a lot of Americans who are not willing to go that extra mile, he won. And I think that the problem in America, as I talked about before, I think that fact checking is an issue in America. Truth decay is an issue in America. Now, I also want to talk about something else that's an issue in America. And that's human decency. Mm-hmm. Vice President Mike Pence, he came out there and said, you know, Kamala, I was one of the first people to come out and congratulate you for getting the vice presidential nomination. You know what Vice President Mike Pence and Donald Trump didn't do? They didn't call up Vice President Joe Biden and tell him, I got the coronavirus. You should get tested. I was there on that debate stage. I got the virus. I contracted it. I may have given it to you. I may have given it to Jill. I may have given it to your Democratic counterparts, your grandchildren, anything. They didn't give a single notice to the vice president. He should have been the first person to receive that. You know, more than the American people. They didn't get it. I know they didn't get it, but he should have gotten that notice. When Hope Hicks got infected, the first person who should have been notified is Vice President Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Former Vice President Joe Biden. That is human decency. Now, as much as we want to talk about human decency, I don't think the debate, we're nearing our time to end here. I don't think that's going to be a point of contention between us. I think the bigger point, Damien, I want to talk to you about this because I know you have a very strong opinion on this. I know you do. Knowing you as a person, how did you feel about Kamala Harris saying, it is my turn to talk to Vice President Mike Pence? I'll find the quote for you. It was much more powerful than it's my turn to talk. I promise you, but I'm going to find the quote while I do. Let's talk about
it. I think it was Mr. Vice President, I'm talking.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I didn't like it.
Okay.
I didn't like it. I didn't like it because it reminded me of Hillary in 16. It reminded me of kind of she came off as kind of snarky, and like she thinks that she, and I know people are going to be like, well, if it would have been a man doing it, it would have been seen as manly. No, if Joe Biden would have done it, I think that it would have been stupid because that's not what they need to do right now. If anything, right now, Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, Senator Harris, need to come off as the underdogs. And I think that when she makes that statement, she seems like she's bossing him around, which I don't like. I personally was not fond of it. I feel like it might turn off some Americans. I feel like it was one of those moments where it was like, for some.
You know who was fond of that?
Who?
It's women across the nation.
Yeah.
Been denied a voice for historically in our nation. I think that when she said, "It's my turn to talk," that spoke to more than the debate.
Sure.
It spoke to more than human decency. It spoke to what women have been facing in this nation since the inception of America.
Yeah.
Women have been historically disadvantaged. So I think if she spoke to women, and more so, I think that if Joe Biden said that, Damien, it maybe come off as snarky. But Trump would have shut up. I know he would have. And I think that Trump took advantage of Joe Biden sitting there and not saying that and saying, you know, Joe Biden's weak. You would never say it. I think that if Joe Biden said that, if that was Kamala Harris saying that, Trump would have not, at least not done it to the level that he did it, you know, interrupting and doing these kinds of things, because it was happening during the debate. But more importantly, she spoke to women.
Yeah. I think that from that perspective, it's, I have to agree with you. I didn't really think about it from the female perspective, but from my perspective, I wouldn't say that I was too fond of it. And I think it was just kind of that, no, not Hillary in 16, you know, because it was like, oh, well, you're the puppet.
I want to make a contrast.
Yeah, go ahead.
And I know I'm talking too much here.
No.
The contrast I want to make is that Hillary in 16 was not seen by the American people during the debates as a good person. She was implicated in Benghazi, hiding her emails. She was not the best moral judge. Now, Kamala Harris, on the other hand, I mean, obviously she has some AG issues from the past, but she is part of that morally right 1% that I think Americans do view her as a good person. I view Joe Biden as the empathetic candidate. So for her saying that, I think it's a better statement than Hillary saying that. Because if you look at the past of who Hillary is, she, in her personality, in who she is, she's snarky. And that's what I'll stand by.
Yeah. I don't know in terms of a winner. Again, it doesn't matter who won yesterday.
Right.
It doesn't matter who won anymore. Because of the fact that today Trump lost. And it's insane how much more he could win. He would just really tweet you know, I'm looking at this thing right now on Twitter, and it's called and I'll end the podcast with this. It's called it's like supposed to be a play on words. I don't know if it's supposed to be bashing Trump or helping him, but this is the idea. It's called Trump and all. It's MAGA strength. It's like supposed to be a pill, right? It's Trump and all, MAGA strength. It's for Trump derangement syndrome. It's for liberals, progressive, feminazis, snowflakes, soy boys, Antifa, BLM, Democrats, beta males, and social justice warriors. And it says that what it gives you is common sense. It's like if the president of the United States would take some of this Trump and all and just get some common sense and tweet common sense things, I feel like he would be doing a lot better on these polls. I don't want to go off of the polls. And I actually want to end the podcast on this point. November 3rd, we might not know who the president of the United States is. November 4th, we might not know who the president of the United States is. We need to stop thinking it as in terms of election night, and it needs to be more election month. There's going to be a lot of mail-in ballots, and there's going to be a lot of delayed counts. That's why it was so crucial for whichever president it is to not, or president-elect at that time, to not declare victory the night of the election. It's very crucial that we wait until about mid-November to actually know who the president of the United States is. Because we might see a blue surge, is what it's being called, where a lot of Trump supporters are going to vote in person. So Trump's going to be winning by the end of the night. And once the mail-in ballots come in, Trump's going to lose historically. Regardless, ladies and gentlemen, regardless what the polls say, regardless of what we say, regardless of, you know, what your neighbors think, you need to think about what you think. You need to go in, whether it's by mail, or whether you're going to go in and vote in person, you need to make sure that you do just that. You need to make sure that you vote. And whether we know on November 4th, which we won't, or whether it's in the middle of November, who the next president of the United States is going to be, we need to voice our opinions. It is crucial to our democracy. It is the most democratic thing that we can do. We need not listen to the polls, but rather listen to our hearts and show out and show up in mass numbers that have never been seen before across this country. Again, whether by mail or in person, whether you have to wait 7 hours, 14, or whether you have to drive to the post office to turn in your ballot, whether it's for Trump or for Harris or for the Libertarian Party, or Trump or for Biden, sorry, or the Libertarian Party, or is for another write-in candidate. You need to make sure that your opinion is heard because it matters.
Yeah.
And with that being said, go ahead, Vern.
Yeah, I want to make a single point. I want to make this point. For coming from my point of view, if you don't agree with President Trump saying, stand down and stand by to white supremacists, like Damien said, show out and show your support. Vote, vote, vote. Like Kamala Harris said, I'm quoting people today. Vote, 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 because your vote matters more than it ever has in this election. This is an election for the future of democracy, the future of what we know as our country, the future of American compassion, the future of empathy, and the future of you, your grandkids, and your generation.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you all for tuning into today's episode. If you made it to the end, be sure to go and comment on our latest Instagram post to let us know that you did make it to the end of the podcast. I want to thank Varun for being an amazing co-host, as always, adding amazing insight into the conversation and just helping this podcast flow so smoothly. And for every single one of you, be sure to tune in this Monday for our next episode. As I said, hopefully we're going to have an amazing guest on. And with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you and good night.
Hello, 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 everybody. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode of the Politicine Podcast. If you enjoyed our conversation, head on over to www.patreon.com/Politicine Podcast for more exclusive members-only content, special episodes, and merch drops. That is once again www.patreon.com/Politicine Podcast. I'm going to make it a jingle when I grow up. It is www.patreon.com/Politicine Podcast. No, I'm just kidding, you guys. But definitely visit www.politicinepodcast.com. For more amazing content from myself, Damien, our team, our amazing artwork head, and our sponsors over at Politicine. And once again, thank you so much for watching today's episode. Thank you to my co-host, Damien Galvin, for an amazing conversation, my friend. I do appreciate your input, as always. And that said, have a great rest of your weekend. Chime in for the next episode, and we hope you enjoyed today's conversation.